Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday night. And I'm being joined on contract extension deadline night. Wouldn't say it's exactly a holiday, but it is for some people. Joining me from the Naples, Florida area. I always say Naples, Florida area. Are you in Naples?
I am in Naples. Yes, okay. I am in Naples, Florida. And it is funny that you mentioned holiday because I was looking back on my notes from last year from the rookie extension deadline. And it was right before Christmas last year because the season was about to start. So it's a little deja vu, but it's on a Monday night, 2 weeks before Halloween.
Yeah. And so that's Bobby Marks, our front office insider. And just, I mean, we'll pretend Bobby's not here for a second. Bobby's ability to help us sound smart and be smart on ESPN, writing, talking on television is absolutely invaluable. And on a day like today, it's just like, I swear I was, he was on NBA today. And like, I was dealing with something and like, I waited like 11 seconds for him to get off the air and then immediately called him because there was something going on I was chasing. So, he's invaluable to us. So Bobby, you have been tracking this class and talking about the $1 billion class. This is one of the biggest, free age or, rookie classes ever. The class of 2018,
2018. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you put that in perspective? Just what this class ended up doing in extensions.
Yeah. They set records. I mean, they did 11 extensions, which is more than the rookie class from a year ago. They hit, $1.1 billion in new contracts for rookie extensions. I'd written about him a couple months ago about how I thought this could be a $1 billion class. I was getting nervous over the weekend because we were like stuck on 912 million and I had an article written and I had to go back. I had to change some things around. And the Landry Shamet deal, I think put him over at 1.1 million. We've got, you know, we started with Luka, you know, Trae Young, Gildress Alexander, Michael Porter Jr. Those are your max guys. And then we saw a lot of compromises. Usually that's what happens with these extensions, whether it's Mikal Bridges, guys like that. But of course there's that one big one that still was out there that didn't get done.
Yeah. So before we talk about that, I will say that while there were five max players, which is a lot, I don't know if it's a record, maybe you would know, but, so that's what helped get it to the billion. I think the deals that have been done, I'll get your opinion on this. The deals that have been done over the last 48, 72 hours, the non-maxes, basically, I felt that they came in lower than expectations and skew team friendly. I'll see if you agree with me on that.
I would say that's accurate. I always say, Brian, that the non-max guys, the Trae Young, the Lucas of the world, even we saw some negotiating in the Michael Porter Jr. contract. Like these are just so hard to do from an agent standpoint because, you know, it's an extension. It's not restricted free agency. The team's got a lot of leverage over you for right now until, of course, next offseason. Probably more of a limited market next offseason with four or five teams that have significant cap space, but we saw with the Lonzo Ball sign and trade, teams find other ways to get players. But yeah, I mean, you look at, it's like the Mikal Bridges number. There was a gap there for a while. Like I actually did not think that deal was going to get done because there was a significant gap that Phoenix had to make up compared to, where his agent saw him, probably a little bit north of $100 million, where Phoenix saw him probably a little bit in that OG Anunoby territory, which is $70, $72 million. So you kind of meet in the middle somewhere, which is, which is $90 million. It's a compromise, all guaranteed, no player options, right? That's the other thing. And I know you've talked about that a lot as far as usually what happens is you get a player option on that back. And even if it's a max deal or one of these contracts, there's no new player options there. But at the end, he's still paid like a top 10 small forward next year. And it's a pretty It's a pretty solid deal there.
Okay, so let's talk about the big one that didn't get done and the big one that did get done, which is Jaren Jackson Jr. So we'll start with DeAndre Ayton. So his max that he could have gotten was the same max, I was talking to one of the sides today. In fact, I talked to both sides in this particular negotiation after it was over. And I talked, one of the sides today referred to it as the Luka max. The Luka max is where you get 5 years with an opt out, with an escalator, should you make all NBA, which Luka already had. And so his number kicked in immediately to $207 million. And we talked about this on the pod a few weeks ago, Bobby. While I wouldn't say that Ayton is a strong candidate for All-NBA, there do have to be three centers. And if things fell a certain way, he could sneak on to third-team All-NBA. So that would have been something to truly negotiate in an extension. So the Luka max was what he came in looking for. What he really wanted in the end was the Trae Young max, I guess you want to call it,
yeah,
which is 5 years, $172 million. That's the number that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander got, $172 million. That's what his expectation was. The Suns were not willing to give him a 5-year contract. Now, this is really the heart of the matter here. At the end of the day, I don't feel like the Suns felt he was a max player. And Jaren Jackson Jr., who we will talk about in a minute, he got 4 years, $105 million. So $26.2 million a year, give or take. And the max on a 4-year max is $133 million. So if you figure that Phoenix was probably picturing Ayton in between that $102 million, $105 million, and at $133 million, that's sort of the delta that maybe Phoenix thought that Ayton was in. And Ayton really, from what I understand, really wasn't interested in negotiating that. He wanted that $172 million. And from what I am told, the Suns discussed offering a 4-year max contract, which would have been $133 million, or even willing to give him a 3-year max, Bobby, with the concept being that that would guarantee him around $100 million, and he could come back to free agency when the television deal kicked in. Although I don't think the television deal will be good. Well, maybe in 4 years it will be, but he might, the salary cap would be higher. It'd be a better time to negotiate. But they never got any progress on that. Ayton wanted the five. They weren't willing to go there. And at the end of the day, they didn't feel he was a max player. And so he didn't get it. He is discussed that he is not pleased about that. The Suns spent $130 some million on Landry Shamet. And as you mentioned before, Mikal Bridges. So they were spending, they spent quite a bit of money this offseason. They just didn't see him as a max, Bobby. And you talked about this. You do really informative videos on your Instagram. I encourage listeners to check those out. You described why you thought he'd be a max player. I wondered if you could explain that to our listeners here about why you felt, more than just judging his actual skill set.
Yeah, I and the one thing I mentioned, and you touched on it a little bit, was the TV money. And what's going to happen, eventually we're going to get an infusion of new TV money. So if we think the Ayton $29.7 million number next year is maybe a little bit of an overpay, by year 3, 4, and 5, it's going to be probably $5 or $6 million less than what the max contract is going to be for a player with his years of service here. And the one thing I said was that you have to be careful if you are Phoenix. And as you mentioned, it's one thing that if they don't feel like he's a max player, that's another thing. But the other thing is that you have to be careful not to overplay your hand when it comes to restricted free agency, because there's always going to be a team out there, and what you might be offering if you're Phoenix right now is going to be maybe less years from a team like San Antonio or maybe Charlotte next year. And then you're going to have instead of having Ayton on a 4-year contract, you might have him on a 3-year contract. We saw that with Gordon Hayward, right? I guess it was 8 years ago in Utah here, but
is it 8 years, Bobby?
I think it has been. Yeah. I mean, he did spend three in Boston.
if you can go out and sign an offer sheet, you can control how your contract is structured. Whereas if the team does your deal here, they can control how it's structured.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing. And that's, you don't want to be, you know, once a team comes in with an offer sheet, you basically lose, you know, you don't have the leverage anymore. And I said, you know, the big thing for me was that, you know, the Chris Paul contract got them out of the luxury tax this year, right? Coming in at $14 million less than his number. They're going to get $13 million in tax distribution. Between Chris's number and campaign's number 2 years from now, they basically have a get out of jail free card because both those are not fully guaranteed. So if it's going to be Ayton on a max and Booker on a max, you know, there is that flexibility there. You're going to be in the luxury tax next year with DeAndre Ayton on a $29 million contract or DeAndre Ayton on a $24 million contract here. So I just thought it was more about buying into the future. And if Phoenix doesn't feel like he's a max guy, we play out this year. I'm sure for you too, is going to be watch what happens within that locker, right? I think that's going to be the biggest thing as far as this, if now it turns into a distraction.
Well, this is where Monty Williams has to do his job here because I think a couple of things about that. I think what you just said is very interesting. Chris Paul opted out of $47 million. What was it?
Yeah, I think it was 40. Was it 44 maybe?
44.
Yeah.
Okay. He took a reduction to $30 million. By doing that, it took them out of luxury tax. And so they will now get everybody else's, the full share of the luxury tax everybody else pays. So that move, we don't exactly know what it is, but somewhere in the neighborhood of $27 to $30 million, that Chris Paul move created an actual real cash for the Suns to spend this year. And, you know, Ayton isn't on the books this year. If you signed him to this contract, he'd be on the books next year, but it's still $30 million in capital. So that's why I think you were saying you should have deployed that. Although obviously they have Chris Paul on the books for $30 million next year that they wouldn't have if they paid him for this year. But anyway, that's a factor. The other thing I think that is a thing here is that there isn't really going to be a lot of teams with salary cap space next summer. And I think this did play into the deals that got offered and didn't get offered in this round. So Oklahoma City is going to have right now. I mean, who knows what they're going to do between now and next year. They're going to have a ton of space. But after that, Bobby, I'm not sure anybody is going to have 30, at least today. I mean, teams could maneuver. Teams aren't going to have that cap space to come to Ayton at $30 million.
No, it's limited. I mean, you're looking at San Antonio, likely Orlando, but they just signed, you know, Wendell Carter to that 4-year, $50 million. They've got Mo Bamba. Where does he fit in there? Detroit is a, you know, a team potentially that can have room.
I mean, they're excited about Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah. I mean, Charlotte potentially, but they'd have to make like 4 different transactions, including not bringing back Miles Bridges, who didn't get an extension. So it's, and the cap is going to go up, you know, from 112 to 119. So we do see a little bit of a number, but as I said, like there's a way to create their cap space for maybe guys like LaMelo Ball, who's making $18, $19 million, but creating cap space to give an offer sheet on for $29, $30 million does, you know, present, you know, probably more of a challenge. I think it would have been interesting for me was, and I thought that when Michael Porter Jr. signed that extension in late September, I thought that was kind of a little bit of a template for some of these teams that maybe were a little bit hesitant on max guys, where maybe if you were eight and you explore, or maybe if you were Phoenix, you explore doing something creative in that 50 year, you know, as far as, with some all-star, all-NBA, getting to the NBA finals here, but there was no deal to be made. And now we go into the season with, it'll be interesting as far as what his temperament is going to be during the year. Yeah.
I'll just say, having talked to both sides today after it was over, I would not say this was close.
No, it was so far away that I actually had him written, and I wasn't even concerned about me deleting it. The other thing too, Brian, with Phoenix is, you know, the Landry Shamet deal came in at, you know, 4 years, $43 million, but you know, year three isn't guaranteed, and year four is a team option. So there's the potential that whatever $10-11 million will come off the books, and that could have, you know, we'll see what happens with Ayton for next year, but that's, you know, a number that they do have flexibility as far as, you know, cutting bait with that.
I do think, you know, one thing I should mention, and you can decide, Bobby, how much value you give this, but one of the reasons that Phoenix was not wanting to give a 5-year contract is that would have made Ayton a designated player.
They already have Devin Booker.
They already have Devin Booker. So you can have two, but you can't have three.
Correct.
And so that would mean that if a player who was a designated player elsewhere, for example, Ben Simmons, I'm not saying that's where it would happen, but I'm just saying, like, if they had signed Ayton to this contract, they wouldn't have been able to trade for a guy like Ben Simmons. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, an all NBA type guy. I mean, there's a handful of them. There's not as many as, you know, like Jamal Murray, for example, you know, like Denver has three of them, as you know, Brian, but Jokic is not an extension. He was just a regular contract. So they're allowed to have Porter Jr. and Murray as those designated players. And, but yeah, that eliminates, it was almost like remember when the AD was in play and they couldn't acquire him because they already had two guys in that nature.
Yeah. So look, I'm not saying that was a driving factor. I think at the end of the day, Phoenix is just like, this is not a guy we want to pay $172 million. We want to pay him $100 million. We want to pay him, I don't know, $115 million. I don't know that number was ever offered. I'm just saying something in between 100 and 130. But that was another topic that was, explained to me that I actually hadn't previously considered. And I think it deserves to be in the forum. So there you go. So on Jaren Jackson, now we're talking about a guy who had a moderate knee injury in a meniscus tear, Bobby, but it really knocked him out for a long time and really seemed to affect him. And so as the Grizzlies are signing this extension, they are worried about that knee. So they did guarantee him a bunch of money here, but how did they structure this contract to try to give them protection? And also, they did this deal thinking about Ja Morant's money, it looks to me.
Well, the big thing was that, you know, as you mentioned about his injuries, he has missed 75 games since the Orlando bubble with the left knee, came back towards the end of the year. It's interesting what they were able to do. They started it high. It's close to the max, which for next year is that 29.7 number, and it's right at 28.9. And then they actually decrease it. You can decrease the contract 8%. The last year, which is 2025-26, is 23-4. The year that you know, that Ja would come into play, it keeps on going down. It's at 27.1. So it's a declining contract, similar to what Orlando did with Wendell Carter Jr. What they did was, to give them some protection, though, is they put a, what they call is an Exhibit 3, a prior injury exclusion. So let's say if he has a devastating knee injury, left
to the same knee,
to that same knee, they have to designate, you have to designate a body part. yeah, I know.
These contracts.
I never really see a team really, you know, take advantage of that before, but I think it's just good. It's good to tell your owner that you have something like that there.
I understand.
So if he has a devastating knee injury, it protects them on that last year, that $23.4 million. But yeah, 4 years, $105 million, has had a really good preseason, for them. And they've done quietly a nice job as far as with that roster, but it's another, we could talk about it at length, but like, what's the next step for that group there? But I thought it's a pretty solid contract to get some, some protection on that fourth year.
So Kevin Herter, this deal came in lower. There was a pretty good feel in the NBA this was going to get done. In fact, at the start of the day today, if you'd asked me which deal I thought for sure was going to get done, I think I was saying Herter. There was a pretty good word out there that was going to get done. But Bobby, it came in 4-64, which is a very good number, but lower than I kind of thought. I mean, he is he's a starter quality player, but he does play off the bench for them. He had a good second half of last season, especially, has desire in the marketplace. And I'm going to tell you, I know, people listen to this podcast know that I decide how good a contract, or sometimes the way you can judge a contract is, can you trade it? This is a contract they could trade right now, although you can't trade him.
Well, you know what? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot right
okay.
now. I'm going to rewind. If you gave DeAndre Ayton 5 years, $172.5 million, you think you could trade him?
Boy, he plays both ends of the court. Can switch out, has never been hurt. Good guy in the locker room. There's a lot to like about him, Bobby.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think?
I think you could trade him.
Yeah. I think you probably, if he has another, because if you sign a guy, you can't really trade him.
Yeah. Yeah. Next year.
But if he had another year that was equal to the way he finished last year, you could absolutely trade him.
Yeah. I agree.
And I think Herter's, as soon as I saw Herter's contract, I was like, oh man. Like, I'm not saying that that's what Travis Schlenk was doing, but that is a tradable contract. And in a year when they're on the hook for some money or they're looking to upgrade, I think Atlanta is good, not great. I could see packaging him and Danilo Gallinari, packaging him and DeAndre Hunter. This was a contract that is going to be movable, Bobby. I don't know how you felt about it, because it starts at only 14 and a half million.
Yeah. And it goes up. It's a typical 8% raises. The last year is almost $18 million here. I think the concern a little bit from Herter's camp was you've got DeAndre Hunter back. You've got Cam Reddish back. Where are your minutes going to be the same as they were at the end of last year? Especially in a walk year, you've got $64, $65 million in front of you. Was it worth pushing the button to get to $72, $73 million and wait until free agency there? But it's a solid contract. It really is. I mean, $14.5 million, he's a good player. And I do think he'll play and have a really good role. And that is, as a movable contract comes, that's right up there.
And then Grayson Allen signed with the Bucks. The Bucks have done some. I mean, they've stubbed their toe. They they lost a player because of a tampering charge. I don't want to make it sound like it's been a merry-go-round, but the Bucks have done some good minor deals. I thought getting Grayson Allen for basically a second round pick, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, they moved Sam Merrill, I think, right? I mean, they one of Memphis's many, and a second round pick they had to send out, one of Memphis's many trades this offseason. And they want to, you know, Milwaukee is a team that, you know, not shy as far as paying into the luxury tax, and they get Grayson Allen. Interesting, Brian, with him, it's a, you know, reported at 2 years, 20, comes in at, you know, about 8.5 a year. It's got a bunch of bonuses in here for games played reaching the NBA finals, games played winning the championship, about 1 point, you know, 3 million per in bonuses there. It's below the mid level, which is going to be at 10.1.
Yeah, his base salary
is 8.5.
8.5 million flat, no raises. Again, now Grayson Allen has played for three teams in 3 years.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Grayson Allen could get traded on this contract lickety-split.
Well, and he could, you know, it's funny. Like, I always say that, you know, I don't want to go into and bore the listeners, but, you know, so rookie extensions don't have a six-month restriction or a year restriction. You know, they have what we call poison pill restriction. It's basically the average of the contract. I've never seen a poison pill restriction get traded before, because if it's an imbalance, basically, of the number. Like, this is a contract that could get traded with the poison pill restriction. I don't think it will, but I'm just saying.
I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it's a good value contract if he can be a halfway decent 3-and-D guy, even if he's not even that much of a D, even if he just shoots threes, it's a good number. I know it's only for 2 years, but I would tell Grayson, he probably already knows. You're probably going to have a long career, but I would rent.
Yes.
I would rent. But this is a good job by Milwaukee of creating a, you know, locking down a player and creating an asset. I mean, I hate to say that, Bobby, but what are you supposed to do? That's the way these teams look at this. And also Grayson, you know, knows that no matter what, he's going to have $17 million in his pocket.
Well,
and
that's the thing, Brian. I mean, these guys are on rookie. I mean, you know, for NBA world, they're on rookie scale contracts. You know, he's a, what was he, like the 21st pick in the draft. He probably made in the 4 years what he just got in this new contract coming up. And it's like, you know, when someone gives you $18, $20 million guaranteed, it's really hard to turn down.
So there was another deal today. So looks like Harden, I mean, we're recording this in the evening. Looks like Harden is not extending. I don't think that's a surprise.
Yep.
Malcolm Brogdon added 2 years and $45 million to his contract. So this is an extremely value contract, you know, kind of slid in there with all these other deals. Bobby, he is taking almost a, for his terms of average salary, it's almost a negligible raise. I mean, he's, you know, it's not that much of a jump at all. He's basically, he's making 21.7 million next year, 22.6 million. That's what he was contracted at. Okay. And then he's adding two more years onto it and a slight pay cut, 22.5 and 22.5 flat, no incentives. I think this is kind of a no-brainer for Indiana.
for point guards. I mean, point guards, you know, you look at top, you know, salaries of point guards. I mean, you're north of, you know, in the high 20s, 30s, some guys, you know, certainly in the 40s here. Brogdon was interesting because he was one of, I think, 20 players that had to be extended by, you know, 11:59 Monday night because he had 2 years left on his contract. The other interesting thing, and I tweeted about it, is that now he comes off the board. He can't be traded because when you extend a player and you add based on, you have to take the what they have left on their contract and what they have in an extension. If it exceeds 3 years or there's a more than 5% increase, then they have a 6-month restriction here. So he comes off the table for, if we ever see a Ben Simmons trade down the road, right. He is, you know, he's not available here. But I think for Indiana's perspective, $22.5 million for a quality starting point guard is a really good deal.
Well, Kevin Pritchard, he knows he's not going to be a free agent destination, and he's careful like this. He likes to extend guys, likes to trade for guys who have years on his contract. This is a move that falls in line with what he's done. Indiana definitely has interest in Ben Simmons. And if there was a deal to be made before this deadline, it was probably going to involve Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, it doesn't mean that there are other ways they can structure deals. They have a number of high salaries or mid-range salaries on their roster, whether it's Sabonis, whether it's Caris LeVert. They have other directions they can go, but it made sense that Brogdon would be in that trade. And so Indiana owns all of their picks. So they could incentivize a pick in addition to a player. And Philly obviously was not interested in a Brogdon deal because they knew that if it got to this point, that they couldn't do it. So I wouldn't say the door on this totally closed, as you say, but I would say Indiana's window to make a Simmons deal happen, probably the sun set a little bit on it. And I think it's probably more because Philadelphia has higher aspirations than a Malcolm Brogdon package. But
well, I'll tell you what, if Ben Simmons keeps on coming to practice in sweatpants and a cell phone in his pocket, you know, the asking price, the asking price might be TJ Warren, TJ McConnell, and a future one.
They love TJ McConnell in Philly. They'll cheer him. All right, let's talk about some of the deals that didn't get done. We already talked about DeAndre Ayton, and 11 guys in this draft, you know, got done. 11 guys who were first round picks in this draft got done. So that's a high number. A guy who didn't was Colin Sexton from the Cavs, who was the 8th pick. This is a polarizing player because he puts up excellent numbers, has shot the ball, Bobby, very well in an era where people prize, 3-point shooting. I mean, he sniffed around at 50, 40, 90. He wasn't there, but he was sniffing around it. You know, Cavs don't have a ton going for him. They gave Jared Allen, is calling Jared Allen a role player unfair?
No, that's fair. I mean, he's not probably a top starter on your team. He's probably a solid starter. You know, he's not your number one, number two guy, but you just paid him, you know, $100 million. And you paid Lauri Markkanen, what, $78 million to come off the bench.
Right, right. So they set the standard there for that. I mean, and Colin is not a role player. He is their star, so to speak. I don't know if this is where it gets polarizing. I'm not so sure he's a star player on a contender, but, you know, he's a little bit undersized, a problem defensively. And Bobby, this was a tough one to negotiate. I don't know what the comparable number is, but if he's sitting there looking at his numbers and he's looking at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander numbers, and he's looking at Trey Young's numbers, even looking at Luka Doncic's numbers, he's like, okay, I'm not maybe a max player, but I'm up there. And this was a tough one for the Cavs, and they have no deal.
Well, even De'Aaron Fox too, you know, right. I mean, you could throw that out from a year ago. I mean, the, you know, Fox, you know, got a max and was on a team that, you know, similar to what Sexton's gone through, rotating Dorf, head coaches, lottery teams. It's funny, Brian, the teams you talk to, as you said, he's polarizing, it's split. You know, there are some, you know, see him as this kind of this borderline all-star type player, you know, had a really, I thought, pretty good year last year. And then there's the doubters, undersized two guard, 60 and 159 record. But, you know, he's had four head coaches in the time, you know, since he was drafted. And he was basically in post and post LeBron, right? I mean, his first year was post LeBron here. I didn't think he was a max guy. I thought he was probably like a $22, $23 million guy, 4 years, 80 potentially here. I'm surprised, but not surprised that there wasn't a deal done. But he's a guy that's, you know, we're going to circle as far as a trade candidate, I would think. You know, usually when these deals don't get done, we have to circle him as a trade candidate to be moved sometime this year, because obviously you don't see yourself investing in him. I know you've got Darius Garland next year, and you, as I mentioned, you've got $178 million that you committed to Allen and Markin, and you still got Kevin Love with that $60 million. But, you know, you could have extended him and still been under the tax next year, you know, for that year. But we play another guy that we play it out. And if they don't think they can build around him, or if he's part of the future, then it's someone they probably should think about moving when we get closer to the deadline.
Yeah. 48% from the overall, 37% from three, 82% from the line. So, okay. Maybe closer to 50, 40, 80, not 50, but you know, that, you know, those numbers, I can see why he's feeling that way. Again, if you're in Cleveland's shoes, while you certainly want to keep the player from being an issue during the season, you have to look out there and say, who of these teams that has cap space is going to make Colin Sexton an offer that exceeds what we're going to offer him now? And that gets to the heart of the issue. His value versus maybe what the Cavs think he could be in the market. There's just a delta. Again, I'll use this term. This is what happens when you talk to agents and executives. They talk about the delta. There's a delta in there. And so, it's tough. Now, Sexton is, his nickname is Young Bull. And, you know, he is a guy who typically plays hard. So I don't expect there to be an issue. But, you know, who knows what this will mean. I wanted to also talk to you about Miles Bridges. You mentioned him in passing earlier. He's been compared to Mikal Bridges a lot. He's a different player in that he's super athlete, not as good of a shooter, not as good of a defender, but has a lot going for him. And when he sees Mikal Bridges get $90 million, I don't know where he was at, but I'm sure that was the baseline he was looking for. And I wonder how that affected the talks, Bobby.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would probably have been his comp. I thought I saw Miles in that probably 4 years, $75, $80 million. The big question is how much of an impact did the Rozier extension have, you know, Terry, you just signed that big number in the offseason. Yeah. You've got Hayward, you know, for a couple more years. You've got PJ Washington eventually coming up next year, as far as from an extension standpoint. But they've balanced their books pretty well. I mean, they're a team that could potentially have cap space next year, but that's, you know, after a series of moves, including, you know, no Bridges and Plumlee, Oubre, guys like that. So I thought that once Rozier got extended, they could have taken a little bit more of an aggressive approach with him, because they weren't going to be a likely cap space team, but he goes into, restricted free agency, probably one of the better forwards, that are going to be out there.
Yeah. Again, is anybody paying him $20 million a year? Maybe. I thought if Mikal Bridges, I think you mentioned this in your Instagram video the other day, if Mikal Bridges had hit restricted free agency, teams would have come after him. Teams could have gotten to a number. And I think he would have had, assuming he had another good year this year, multiple offers.
I think he would have had more suitors than DeAndre Ayton. And that's not a knock against DeAndre Ayton.
I think his price would have been lower.
Yeah, and his price would have been lower. And, you know, wings are a premium. You know, Mikal Bridges wasn't going to cost you $172 million, but if it was $100 million, I just thought there was more of a, probably would have been more of a market for him compared to Ayton.
Yeah. A couple other guys. I mean, I don't know if there's much worth talking about. I mean, Anfernee Simons in Portland, they called off talks a few days ago. They were never really close there. Dante DiVincenzo sees what Grayson Allen gets and is like, I think I want a little bit more than that. So
he's got to get healthy. I mean, that's the big thing, right? He's got to get back out there because he was heading towards probably that Kevin Herter number, I would have thought, right?
It's a good comp. Yep. He's a better defender, but not as good of a scorer, I don't think. But he has a lot going for him. They really like him there.
Yep.
So, you know, there's some other, you know, Lonnie Walker.
Yeah, Lonnie Walker is interesting just because, you know, there's a track record in San Antonio, right? This would have been the third year in a row for extensions. They had Deontay Murray and Derek White. And then last year, I heard maybe Walker and at $12 to $13 million. It's funny, Brian, everyone's using that Luke Kennard comp from last year. You know, Kennard got, I think, 4 for 56 with a team option. Everybody's like, I want that contract. You know, I'm a rotational guy. I want that contract.
Right.
And, that was a little bit of an overpay, I would say, by the Clippers.
One of those, I don't think we could trade him.
Yes. No, I don't think so. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, the groups, I mean, I think if you're New York and you're looking at Kevin Knox still there and what you could have had, I mean, as far as some of these, the guys that, that you passed up there, but you know, Kevin Knox and Mo Bamba, who has actually had a good preseason. And so that's your, you know, I mean, the other guy too is, Marvin Bagley. You know, Marvin Bagley is going to be interesting in Sacramento this year as far
They have till November 1st to pick up his option.
Yeah.
It's a big number.
Oh, they already did.
Oh, they did pick it up.
Oh, yeah, because he's going into his fourth year, I believe. I think he
is. Oh, yeah, that's right. This is his final year.
Yeah.
Brain fart. Sorry. No, brain fart.
No, it's okay. But yeah, he's going to be interesting just because there's glimpses there as far as when healthy. But I mean, there's a talk about a logjam of bigs there. Goodness gracious. I mean,
well, Bagley, you know, there's been sort of softly veiled trade requests. I think it was his father or something a year ago. And said, you know, he wants to be traded and it hasn't happened. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's we had 11 guys paid in this class for over $1.1 billion and picks 1 and 2 weren't one of them, you know? So, and as you mentioned, you know, Kevin Knox, I mean, I know things are going well for the Knicks, but you think about this, Kevin Knox went 9, Mikal Bridges, 10, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 11, Miles Bridges, 12, Michael Porter, 14. Of course, Porter went 14 because of his back issues and then missed the first year. So it was a reason why he went back down there. But yeah, this is, you know, so we, you know, certainly when you include Doncic and Young, this is a potentially big time class. So, Bobby, thank you for dropping some knowledge on us. It was a busy day. Now I'm off to have phone calls as you do with all the postmortems on.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm not going to be staying up till midnight waiting on James Harden. That's for sure.
No, I don't think so. But, you always get, for people in our job, we always get the postmortems, 1.5 to 3 days of postmortems after the draft, the trade deadline, free agency, extension deadline.
Yep.
We'll hear it. So thank you very much, Bobby. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We will talk to you later this week.